from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 132, recorded live Thursday, October 2nd, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott discusses Subsonic with Rob Connery.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting down right now with Rob Connery, my partner in crime at Microsoft, a program manager. What group do you work in, Rob? Are you in the ASP.NET group?
No, I'm not in the ASP.NET group. I actually work with Sean Burke in the Silverlight Tooling group, believe it or not.
You work in Silverlight Tooling?
Yeah.
But you're kind of best known for building Subsonic, and then most recently been doing some really cool stuff with the MVC storefront. How is that Silverlight Tooling?
Well, interestingly, when I started off in the Agility group, and it's kind of an internal group to Microsoft, and Sean was the director of that group. They were the guys mm-hmm. that did the Ajax Control Toolkit. And so the best way that we used to look at it was, you know, they're sort of a little pack of ninjas that could work outside of some of the software strictures within Microsoft. And they could do things like work on CodePlex projects and so on. So the stuff that I was doing for MVC initially, which was the HTML control toolkit, was sort of outside or out of band, as they say internally. Not really part of the core stuff. So they lobbed it to Sean's group and I got to work on it. That's how that all started.
Oh, so you were Sean Burke's private ninja.
Sean Burke's private, exactly. And I am on fire. Thank you very much.
Very cool. Okay. And you've been doing the MVC storefront. How many of those screencasts have you done so far?
I am recording number 22 right now, believe it or not.
22. Man. That's, you shame me. You shame me with your talented screencasts. You can see all of those at ASP.NET/MVC, if I understand correctly.
That's right. Yes.
So you've been building the storefront. When is it going to be done?
You know, that's a good question. I get asked that question a lot internally. And my answer is, I don't really know. I think the initial rev is going to be done here in the next month. But I know there's going to be things I'm going to need to add and tweak and change to it. But hopefully the initial bits will be done in a month or so, I think.
Okay. Now, what do you use for the data access layer? Because you're known for Subsonic, which is a data access layer generator. What are you using for the storefront?
Well, interestingly, I'm using Link to SQL. The goal of the storefront is to be lightweight, reusable, expandable. And so, you know, I had to kind of go with something that people are familiar with and can use. And, you know, Subsonic has got a decent following, but not that many people in ASP world use it. So I had to go with something that people are immediately familiar with. In addition, Subsonic, as of now, doesn't do any of the iQueryable stuff. So I had to go with something because my repository demands iQueryable. So I had to go with something that did that.
Now, this is interesting. So you're also working on patterns. You're thinking about patterns when you're doing this. This is an educational experience, not just for the public, but for yourself as well. What is this iRepository pattern that you and Phil and some other folks have worked out? I know that there's a common repository pattern, but you guys have a specific one for Link.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing that came about. You know, when we started doing the storefront, I was interviewing a bunch of guys. You know, I didn't want to make any mistakes, so to speak, and I wanted to kind of please the crowd that used MVC the most. So I talked to Steve Harmon and Ayande Rahin, and a couple of things that came out of it was the idea of using iQueryable as the repository return type. And initially, it was like, oh, that sounds interesting. You know, we'll do some late SQL execution here. But what ended up happening is that, you know, since you can build your queries on top of an iQueryable later, in other words, keep building this expression out, what ended up happening is we built a really lean repository API. In other words, in the typical repository pattern, you have a get by, kind of a get by problem. In other words, your API bleeds and bleeds and bleeds and gets bigger and bigger and bigger as you need more functionality from your database. What you can do with an iQueryable repository is you can have, let's say, 5 core returns and maybe 1 save method. And you might have just something like get products. And then what you can do is you can push the filtration up one level into, say, business logic, and then you can say get products dash where product ID equals blah, blah, blah. And so it was a very fascinating turn of a pattern there. I got a little bit of backlash to it. People didn't like me moving their repository cheese, and they were like, this is not what Fowler says to do. And so, you know, it was good. It was a good interchange, but and as people have been using it, they really like it. And I have to say, I really enjoy the simplicity of it all.
Hmm. And do you think that things have calmed down and people think it's a good thing, or are they still, have you still got enemies in the?
No, I think the more people that, I wouldn't say they're enemies, they were just saying, you know, the pattern police, right? They were just saying, this isn't what Fowler says to do. And it was a good point, because what they mostly were concerned about was I was calling it the repository pattern, in quotes.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's the link to SQL Rob Connery repository pattern, as told to iRepository pattern. Has anyone asked Martin what he thinks?
No, not yet.
See how I just said Martin, like we hang out all the time?
What? Name dropper. I heard that about you.
Me and Martin just hanging out at Chipotle, you know. Sorry.
It's taco time with Martin. Anyway. I hear Hansel Minutes. Next Hansel Minutes will be Taco Time with Martin. I think that's what the title should be.
Taco Time with Martin. Exactly. I think that I'll call him, and I may just do that just to make a point.
Okay.
So why didn't you use Subsonic, and are you going to move it over to Subsonic?
Well, the main reason I didn't use Subsonic is because I'm still working on version 3.0, which is implementing iQueryable. And that is not easy stuff. And, you know, it requires that I rejigger a lot of the internals of the way Subsonic does things.
So you're going to implement iQueryable. You're going to become a Subsonic link provider.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I've heard from Allende that is non-trivial.
It is exactly non-trivial. It's an amazingly complex pattern. Complex in a good way. I'm not trying to say anything negative. It's just complex.
Right. It's not overly complex. It's just, it does a lot. So it's, you have to take that expression tree and translate it into your own kind of an expression tree. But when you start, you know, getting basic stuff to work, but once you start getting a projection, then suddenly things become non-trivial.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Yeah.
Interesting. So here, I'm going to play the role of the guy that doesn't know anything about Subsonic.
Sure.
And let's walk through what this is like. So I'm a Joe developer, or Scott developer at this point. I guess all developers are named Scott at this point.
Yeah.
And I've got a domain, which is true. I've got nerddinner.com, and I want to make it a place for people to register nerd dinners. And I've decided, let's say, that I want to use Microsoft open source software as much as I can. I'm going to use MVC, and I want to use Subsonic. So I sit down, I get my system, and I what do I do? What do I start when I want to do this?
Well, you'd head over to Coplex, download and install the latest, which is 2.1.
Subsonic. At subsonicproject.com?
At codeplex.com/subsonic. Yeah, and then we have support at subsonicproject.com. That's right. Yep.
Okay, so I get Subsonic 2.1.
Mm-hmm. And so
what does it do to my system? Should I be afraid of it?
No, it doesn't. Well, we have an installer. So what it, you know, it does what a typical installer does, which is, you know, puts it in the program
Fill
registry.
Fill up my GAC with garbage?
No GAC. No GAC at all.
I like that.
Yeah, no GAC. So nothing in terms of hardcore .NET stuff. This is all just, you know, when you typically install a program using an MSI Windows installer, it registers it somewhere and then in the registry ether. So you can uninstall it as well. So in your program folders, programs files folder, you will see a Subsonic folder in there, and you'll have all the bits, including our assemblies and also our code generation templates. But that's neither here nor there. To install it into your project, there are a couple of settings you need to do in the web config. And if you go to subsonicproject.com, right there on the front is watch this video. It's all of 6 minutes, and it's me slobbering into a microphone telling you and showing you by my typical webcast ways how to set up Subsonic in your project.
Okay.
And it uses
Do you install add-ins, and do you mess with Visual Studio in some way?
No. Initially, when we came out with Subsonic a while ago, we used the build provider. That's specific to a website versus a web application project. And I'm going to assume we're going to use, we're using MVC for Nerd Dinner, right? So that is a hybrid of kind of a web application project. Long and short of it is you can't use a build provider. What we did before was we used the build provider to actually generate code in memory, but it's more like in the temporary ASP.NET folders. But you had access to the code that was generated. It didn't create any files in your project. It was just there. So that was the original appeal of it, and you didn't have to manage it, and you didn't have to do anything. The build provider did it all for you.
Okay, so in that example, Subsonic is a build provider and code generator.
Exactly.
For DALs, for data access layers.
Exactly.
But the DAL it generates isn't a generic DAL, it's its own DAL, it's its own style. You don't generate and hibernate stuff, you generate Subsonic stuff.
Yeah, we use kind of the lightweight, I call it ORM light, where you kind of project the database as your domain or model back into the application and you work from that point on. And we used Active Record, the Active Record pattern, simply because it was easiest. Which kind of winds me back to the whole focus and goal of Subsonic, which was to kind of take the 80% approach, which is, 80% of the projects out there are lightweight, just really quick implementations, probably don't need to use what I'll call a heavyweight pattern or enterprise patterns. They could be prototypes. Aaron Jensen told me once, he said, I thought Subsonic was just a toy. I mean, it doesn't really do much and it doesn't really do this enterprise stuff. And I said, well, toy is fine. It's a good way to put it. But at the same time, let's face it, most of the applications that people are working on out there in the world aren't, going to design to make airplanes. They're just sort of these basic applications. Mm-hmm.
Now, so, are you minimizing Subsonic a little bit there? Are you saying that you would use it for little stuff and not for big stuff?
In terms of Active Record, that would sort of be the approach. And the reason why I say that, I have a caveat coming. There's two parts to what I'm about to say. The first part is, if you're going to use Active Record, generally it's kind of a boom bang kind of thing. I want to get this thing done. I want to get it out. I have some work to do. And this is not an enterprise app, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in that case, it's sort of a lightweight. However, the second part of that is, you can also absolutely use it in a higher enterprise pattern, like the pattern we just talked about. If you want to implement repository with dependency injection and all that stuff, you certainly can. I have a blog post on that, and it's on subsonicproject.com as well, where I show you how to just use the query tool to go retrieve some data and fill in your model. So you can definitely do something like that too.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman with a word from our sponsor. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 AJAX applications with Web 1.0 components? You really can't. If you want to do the next generation web applications, you'll need next generation components, just like the ones that our friends at Telerik have got. They're RAD controls for ASP.NET AJAX. It's a huge pack of web controls built on top of ASP.NET AJAX that'll add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. The new controls mirror the AJAX API from ASP.NET, so development is really straightforward. The client scripts are shared, so loading time is not a problem. If you just set a couple of properties, and you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor from ASP.NET AJAX Telerik loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the new RAD grid handles thousands of records in just milliseconds. But as always, it's best to try for yourself. So you can visit Telerik.com/ASP.NET AJAX and download a trial. Thanks a lot. Now, where do you see Subsonic fitting into a world with, LLBL Gen and Hibernate and all those kind of things? Those are more focused on being an ORM, while yours is more of a Swiss Army knife.
Exactly. It all comes back to, I have a one sentence value principle that I've applied to this project ever since I started it. And that is, I want the developer to go home early. And my opinion has always been that there's too much cruft and complication in our lives. There really is. And as developers and geeks, we overcomplicate things. It's just our nature. And a lot of times it just doesn't matter what the things we're spinning out on, just doesn't matter, And, I'm not trying to minimize or say things are unimportant, but, the point being that the whole goal of Subsonic is to just get the work done, get you out the door. So I forgot the question you just asked me because I was going off on a tangent.
Were you too focused on getting out the door? Because you live in Hawaii and your focus is always to leave work as quickly as possible.
I know. Exactly right. It's a beautiful sunny day. Why am I talking to you?
My question was, where do you see you as it relates to more formal, open source, but industrial strength, ORM. I mean, are you industrial strength? I don't know what that means, but people always ask questions like that.
Sure. No, it's okay. It's a good question. Industrial strength in terms of can Subsonic scale? Can it handle the load? Of course it can. In terms of, In terms of kind of applying patterns that, let's say, the alt.net crowd holds dear, maybe not. Maybe it's not so good that way. And Hibernate is excellent at doing the things that ORMs in theory are supposed to do. You know, for me, theory is wonderful, but I don't hold tight to it. So what I've tried to do with Subsonic is to make it as absolutely flexible and sort of hybrid and just get the job done. And so, you know, if you need to, I don't want to say cut corners, but I have a thing in there. This is a quick tangent. I have a query in there called an Atwood query. And you also called a coding horror query, which just takes inline SQL. Cause you know, Jeff had a rail against proprietary.
You actually call it that? Command dot Atwood query?
Yeah, you can say, yeah, new subsonic dot Atwood query. And then you have to just send in straight SQL.
That's actually what it's called?
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah.
I respect them. I respect the framework just that much more now.
It's a little Easter egg I threw in there for Jeff.
That's cool. Has he ever found it? Hopefully he'll find it now, but he's busy doing other things.
Oh yeah, he's a very busy man. So anyway, that's how it stacks up against the bigger heavyweight things out there. And you know, we don't have XML files. We don't have built in the concept of abstracting out a model for you and whatever. We kind of leave that to you. Whereas, and Hibernate tackles a little bit of a bigger picture that way. They have caching. They have this thing called a future query, which is really cool. All these great ideas. And I'm trying to keep it lightweight and easy.
Okay. So I've downloaded that. I install it. You don't screw up my GAC. Do I start at the database or do I start writing? What do I do? I mean, I've got nerddinner.com. I know that there's going to be nerd dinners. You know, I know what my domain is going to be. Mm-hmm. Where do I start?
You start with the database and build out your model in your database.
Scandalous. And that's so database focused.
I know. I know. It's so what, a year ago? 2 years ago.
Okay. But so I started the database. So I have to, so it really is table focused. It's not like Rails where I can make a markup file that describes what the database looks like and you can project it onto the database.
You can, sure. You can, we have migrations as well.
Can you generate my database for me?
I can, yeah. We have migrations. So if you want to use migrations, this is a good time to introduce the second aspect of what Subsonic has. We have a command line tool that does a lot of code generation for you. And so that is also as part of the installer and it's called sonic.exe, also known as subcommander. And so what you can do is you can just work directly with the command line tool and you can do things like generate your data access code and it puts it right into your project. You can harness those calls into an external tool process inside Visual Studio, which is what I urge people to do. We have all this in screencast walkthroughs, by the way, on our site. And so, yeah, you can do things like that. And to run migrations, it's one of those, you say sonic.exe migrate and then the name of your table. And then it spits out the code that you need, sticks it in your project. And then you go from there using, you know, kind of typical thing like, you know, a new table with this name, table.add column with the type and so on. And then you hit migrate, sonic.exe migrate, and then it will do it. It'll generate your database for you.
So what am I writing to get my, if I'm going to have a dinner's table? Am I writing markup? Am I writing C#? Am I writing something custom?
You are writing C#, and you would say using
really?
You'd say using migration M equal to new migration, and then open brace. I'm going to do this in C# on the fly off the top of my head. Woohoo! Mm-hmm. And then you'd say dinner table, which is you'd say table, and then give it
dinner
a name.
Table. Dinner
equals new table with in quotes passing the constructor and the name.
And you just describe the whole table in C#.
Yes, you can. And the cool thing is, if you forget to add a primary key, we add it for you. You can also add, you can add our audit columns. We have four of them, which is created by, created on, modified by, modified on, as well as a timestamp field. That's added for you automatically. If you tell it to, you'd say add subsonic state columns. It'll do it. And then that's it. And so when you're in your project and you hit run, our standard is that there's a folder in there called migrations. This, our tool will look for the files. It will actually pull the code in, compile it on the fly and execute it. And when the execution goes off, it turns it into SQL and shoves it into the database and then it forms your table for you.
So I'm thinking I do all this. Let's say that I really like domain-driven design. I really think that's a better way to do it. This is a kind of a poor man's domain-driven design because, I mean, I'm describing it. In this case, my DSL, my domain-specific language, just happens to be C# plus Subsonic. I describe my migrations. I run this and you'll go off to my database and add the appropriate tables and create my SQL database.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Will you make me .SQL files, or do I do all my migrations with your tool?
You can, once the database is created, we also have another feature in Hub Commander, which will take your SQL, both your structure and your schema and your data, and will output it to a SQL file. That's a separate operation, but it'll do that, yes. Sure.
Okay. So now I've got my dinners table, and I've got my dinner database, and I'm going to use ASP.NET MVC. Mm-hmm. So I go up to codeplex.com/ASP.NET, and I get that. Mm-hmm. And, I start, writing tests and things. Mm-hmm. What is it about Subsonic that's going to make writing the tests easy or not easy? Do I need to get a mocking framework?
No, you don't need to mock Subsonic. In this case, what I would urge you to do is to use a typical repository pattern, which is a very testable pattern. And then mm-hmm. inside your repository, you can use inside your implementation of your repository, let's call it your SQL dinner repository, you would use Subsonic inside there, but I would urge you to mock or stub the repository for testing. You don't want to rely on Subsonic for any of this stuff. Does that make sense?
Now, will Subsonic create that repository pattern for me?
Not at this time, but I am working on something to do just that, actually, at the moment.
Is there anything that you want to announce and give me an exclusive worldwide preview of?
I wish I could. Let's just say if I made the announcement, I'd be quite happy to make the announcement. I can't just yet. I have to do a few more things.
Okay. But you are working on something. So that's interesting because where I was going with that seemed like a very obvious next step, and you're already doing that. So it's coming soon.
Yes, exactly right.
Okay. So I use the repository pattern, and I suppose I can learn that pattern, the iQueryable style of the Rob Connery official, not Martin Fowler iRepository pattern. From looking at your MVC storefront information.
Well, in this case, if we're using Subsonic, we can't do iQueryable, not with 2.1. So what we would need to do is just implement your typical repository pattern, which is as we need a call to the repository to get some data, that has to be an explicit call.
Okay. What would those return then? If they're not returning iQueryable, they're just iList of stuff?
Exactly right, iList of stuff.
Okay, and then I would just, because I'm using the repository pattern, I could pass in-memory repositories and return mm-hmm. iLists of stuff that isn't in the database. And
exactly right.
Do my testing and my mocking and everything's magical.
Yep, exactly right.
Minimal mocking, really.
Yeah, and well, this is one of the neat things about Subsonic. One of the features that not many people know that we have is that you can create your own domain objects if you want, although we do generate it for you. But you don't need to have it generated for you. You can actually, we have a I don't want to call it a DSL, but it's a very fluent interface querying tool. So you can say new select dot from and pass in the name of the table in a string, which is a magic string. But if mm-hmm. you don't generate your code, that's what we have. Anyway, you'd say select new and then from dinner. And then you can say execute as typed list. And then you pass in the type of object you want returned in a list. So what Subsonic will do is it will spelunk your object that you put in, and it will actually bind it for you in a list and kind of do an on the fly sort of translation, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to have Subsonic be a nice data access tool for you. The benefit there, because a lot of people would say, why would I do that instead of use, say, a SQL command or something like that? And the benefit of doing it that way is that Subsonic will talk to a lot of databases, including MySQL, SQLite, SQL CE, Vista, and
Vista
Oracle.
DB,
and,
you mean?
Yeah, VistaDB, thank you, and Postgres. So
wow,
yeah.
So that's cool. That's a lot. That sounds like a lot. That would be a very complicated test suite to support all those databases.
I think so.
Are you just doing that? You're just doing that via OLADB and making sure that the underlying SQL that you end up generating is very compatible, or do you have providers?
Yeah. We have a provider pattern for this, and so what?
Like how do you make sure that you're not going to break just Postgres in the next version?
Oh man, that's a good question. Let's see if I'm going to answer this right. We have to use different providers, different data providers, to talk to different database systems.
Right.
But those are not responsible for doing our SQL generation. So we use an inheritance pattern for doing that. We have what we call the ANSI SQL generator, and it will generate, according to standards, ANSI SQL, but every database has its own version of ANSI SQL, pretty much. So we have override generators on top of that, if that makes any sense. So when it's one of those things where if we find a problem during generation, we can go mm-hmm. in and we can tweak it with like Oracle. Let's say the Oracle SQL generator is something we've had to pay a lot of attention to. Stuff like delimiters and the way dates are handled and so on. So that's pretty much how we test it. It's not easy. It's not easy at all.
Well, but it certainly makes my life easier as the programmer.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, in a small other tangent, I had a big discussion on our forums once. One of the users said, could you please stop hitting the database so much with your unit tests? And I said, I'd love to, but unfortunately, this is a data access tool, and I don't really know any other better way to do it to make sure the queries that it returned are correct. So I'm sort of stuck. So if any of your listeners out there have ideas for me, I'd love to hear it, because I like, you know, Oracle and MySQL and testing SQL. I mean, sure, I can do string comparisons, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to be very complete.
Yeah, that's a good point. What is correct at that level?
Exactly.
Huh. Okay, so this is the DAL side. What controls, what website controls, what page controls do you have that are going to make my life easier? You know, of course, I know that you have some web form stuff, but I'm using, you know, ASP.NET MVC in this experiment.
For MVC, there's not much. You know, the thing I'm working on right now, and it's kind of one of the major reasons I was hired, is to kind of sprinkle some goodness on top of the framework. And so that's kind of what I've been doing over the last few months, although I haven't been terribly active in it. And it's mostly because I want the framework to mature. I can't, you know, double up, triple up my work and change things every time the framework changes. But, unfortunately, I don't have much UI stuff yet.
Well, do any of the things you do have, like the drop down, the quick table, mini list, do any of those not require postbacks such that they could be used in ASP.NET MVC?
If all of those, I'm thinking maybe quick table. Drop down requires postback. You know, because they're kind of data bound controls. They flex the core control framework. Quick table, I think, just outputs straight HTML, so that might be a nice candidate. But I haven't tried it yet, to be honest with you.
I think that if the DAL is pretty clean, there's probably would not be hard to make a bunch of subsonic specific HTML helpers to make life easier, and certainly the ones that exist now. But I'm thinking like larger ones to spit out YUI grids and things like that would not be
too
hard.
Well, yeah, you just homed in on exactly the reason I'm waiting on this UI stuff. I mean, my opinion, and it's kind of crazy, when I was making the builders, I always had a sanity check where, you know, I would look at the code when I initially was creating this way a long time ago, I would look at the code that it took to output an element, like, let's say a dropdown. And then I'd weigh it against the HTML that it took to write it, you know, and like, you know, so HTML.textbox, and where you need to add in some class attributes, was one of the main culprits, because it took more code to use the framework than it did just to write, you know, input type equals text, you know, and then decorate it with some code. So, you know, that to me is the sanity check, and it's something that I need to have a good grasp on before I do anything with subsonic, because whatever I create at that basic level, it's going to have to kind of be the core of what I create later. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
Huh. Okay, so let me think here. We've got MVC. We've got we pick our unit testing platform. We might need a little mocking here and there, but the repository pattern will handle most of that. I can pick whatever data I spit, whatever, excuse me. I can pick whatever database I want because of the flexibility of subsonic. Now, I would use subsonic over Anhibernate or over LLVL Gen. Why? Because of the practicality of it, the pragmatism. I mean, it's okay to talk up your own project.
Yeah, sure. Well, so, you know, LLVL, I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, it's an awesome tool, but if you have a pocketbook constraint, then that might be a consideration. It blows doors on subsonic in terms of functionality, but that functionality tends to be more edge case stuff, if I can just sort of kind of cushion it that way. Franz, please don't send me hate mail. I'm just saying. But it's an awesome tool. In terms of Anhibernate, there is a level of complexity in terms of implementing it and working with it. Some people find it a little daunting. Now, that's changing with all the screencasts they're doing and the introductions to Anhibernate.
So that speaks to the pragmatism, I think.
Right. Yeah. And this using subsonic is really for people that aren't into sort of the tinkering aspect of building a website. You know, a lot of people really get into the underlying, like, pop open the hood and let's roll up our sleeves and get greasy. Some people are just like, I got this Honda sports car with lowered, you know, neon things under the doors, and I just want to get in and drive fast. You know what I mean? If I open that hood, it's going to scare me. So a lot of people just kind of want some flexibility, but they just don't want to get into the kind of minutiae. Does that make sense?
No, I like that. That's good. That is a very your pragmatism at every level is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I figured that the neon under the door reference you'd like, because you have that under your minivan at home, don't you? And I saw that neon.
Yeah. The minivan has a lot of hydraulics and things, because the boys,
right,
the 2-year-old,
exactly,
likes that.
Yep.
Pimp my minivan. Not too much. Cool. So, right. What are some, are there any example projects? What is the canonical project when we send people off to go learn more about subsonic? I'm sure people have heard about it, but haven't necessarily seen the example application. What's the best example of a really complete subsonic application?
We had, about a year and a half ago, I created a starter site. I called it the Subsonic Starter Site. It was a web forms application, worked with Subsonic 2.03. It was just your basic CMS file new, use this template kind of thing. And we had a bunch of widgets in there, FCK editor and a bunch of other things. And, that was a pretty cool site. I mean, generally it knocked out 80% of the things you needed, such as, membership. It was all wired in there, logging in. We had Ajax plugged in. We had on the fly, editing of pages and creating paragraphs and stuff to make it was like .NET Nuke ultralight, to be honest with you. So, yeah, and the whole goal was, you know, I felt at the time 60% of all the applications I ever made needed those things and I could just build on top of it. So that was what we did before. We kind of veered away from supporting that, only because of time limitations. And, you know, my plan is when we kind of, issue out 3.0 here in the future, I'm going to revamp that entire site. But so having jumped on the MVC team and stopped working pretty much in web forms altogether, it's sort of been hard to support that.
All right, very cool. Well, Rob Carney, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with me today.
Sure. Well, I'm glad I could help. When are we going to get started on Nerd Dinner?
Let's put this podcast in the can and get it out, and let's start working on Nerd Dinner in the next 5 minutes.
Sounds good.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll talk to you again next week.